This is R Time, spelt R-T-Y-M-E, and the track is called R Theme. Track from Derek May again, along with Daryl Wynn, and it was released in 1989. So this was a record I partly wanted to pick out because it's got it for, in terms of the, you know, the canon of Detroit techno, this is kind of at the slightly bouncier, slightly happier, slightly housier end.
It's very jolly for Derek May.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, of course, this
almost
is the
banal.
One, this is exactly that. This is the one I really like. I love the banal stuff. I mean, I was going to say before, and I think I can just say it for, just slip it in now. There's a really strong correlation between a lot of the music that is coming out of Detroit in this period and Larry Heard's recordings in particular. Because that Larry Heard was quite angular, and it was he did have this very stripped down feel, but there was something quite interestingly composed and produced about a lot of his records. So I think there's a good parallel to mention there. But yeah, this was just Derek May kind of making something that was gonna, you know, maybe he even had Chicago in mind when he made this record. I have no idea, but it's one of my favorite early Detroit techno tracks.
Well, yeah, I really like it. Underground Resistance is going to be our next track. An early bit of work by Mike Vax and Jeff Mills together. So Underground Resistance is the name adopted as a recording project first by the duo of quote-unquote mad Mike Banks and Jeff Mills, two more black Detroit early techno producers. And Underground Resistance was sometimes the name of the recording project, and it was also the name of the label that they set up. And it became really the iconic Detroit label. And Underground Resistance is interesting because that right from the beginning, as the name of the label might suggest, they very explicitly wanted to promote the idea that techno was a kind of politically radical music, that it was deliberately innovative, it was experimental. We would say it was Afrofuturist, although that wasn't even a term that was around at the time. Indeed, one would have to say that probably the term Afrofuturism, I think, would never have taken off to the extent that it did had it not been for the existence of Underground Resistance being sort of the thing which you could most definitively point to as very clearly being informed by a kind of aesthetic and ethic and politics for which Afrofuturism was the best name anyone could think of. Jeff Mills came from this industrial music background. Mike Banks, as I said, was kind of very political, very influenced in his outlook by people like Public Enemy. And the music has a reputation, Underground Resistance, for being quite abrasive a lot of the time, and it can be, but a lot of it isn't. And this track, I think, is, again, to me, this is quite melodic, at least in places. And of course, the reason I picked this track from 1990 is because of its title, this being Love is the Message. We could not play Underground Resistance 1990 track Theory.
But what theory?
Doesn't matter.
Black Power. The Black Panthers is the main reference point, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, of course. The Panthers are a really important reference point for them as well. Yeah, I should have mentioned that. And Underground Resistance, has to be said, they were, for many years, they were involved with kind of community politics. They were involved with really trying to develop an independent music sector, which would be anti-capitalist and cooperative and redistributive. And they were also quite, you know, they also wanted to keep away from the idea that that techno was just this sort of escapist music. I mean, it is club music. I mean, it has that, yeah, they have had a great kind of career as, you know, as a club label. But I think, as Tim's already indicated, there is always something interesting going on with Detroit techno. I mean, to me, this is interesting because the first people I was friends with who released a record were a couple of guys I was at school with, actually at sixth form, which is like, the last couple of years of high school, if you're not in Britain. And they, you know, they were the first people I ever knew who actually released a record. And they were guys who were basically like techno fans. And they came from a very privileged background. They were both white. But they were absolutely in this mold, which I have known. I've had very close friends, I would say, over the years who have fit this mold of someone who is basically quite a geeky kid at school and likes computers and likes electronic stuff. And because of that, you get really attracted to sort of electronic music. So you're listening to New Order and Kraftwerk and maybe Cabaret Voltaire if you're really cutting edge. And then from that, it's a fairly natural progression to be listening to Detroit techno. And they would go around and they would actually play live sets at raves, but they themselves were really not ravers. They were sort of computer geeks, really. And there's always something of this in the whole history of Detroit techno and its various lineages. There's this image, which I think is quite accurate, of the producer who is interested in dance music and its history, but they're interested in it more for its sonic innovation than because they're really interested in the dance floor as a particularly important site of social expression, which is sort of fascinating. And it is, you know, I think you've got that with a lot of what's going on with underground resistance. Is they're very conscious of this history. They're conscious of the history of people like Walter Gibbons, but they're more interested in Walter Gibbons as an avant-garde, you know, extremely experimental sonic innovator than they are really in, you know, being at clubs. So you get this music that is sort of dance music, but there's never been that many clubs where you would hear loads of this music, or not for very sustained periods.